Butcher 17, Alexander Solzhenitsyn, The Gulag Archipelago.
We come now to the 17th of our lectures on great books, books that have made history, books that can change your life. And through those great books, we have explored and discussed a series of great themes. Themes that I believe every thoughtful individual must deal with, either by consciously making a decision about it or by neglecting it. We have talked about God. Do you believe in the gods? And if you do, do they care about humans? Do they intervene in human affairs? And if so, do they set a course for your life? Fate. Is what happens to you the product of a divine order? Or is it simply the random clashing of atoms? As Marcus Aurelius said, you must decide, either order or atoms. We've asked ourselves the question of fate, of God, and of good and evil. Are there absolute standards by which we judge actions? Do we call them good and do we call them evil? And from that, we have ask ourselves, then, having made these decisions, how do we live our lives? What is the meaning of our lives? And in our next series of books, we intend to discuss the question of duty and responsibility. We began that, in fact, with our discussion of Aeschylus and the Prometheus Bound, in which the Titan Prometheus decided it was his duty, his responsibility, to refuse to obey the order of Zeus and to permit the destruction of humankind. To do your duty requires an idea of conscience. How do you know what your duty is, and how do you decide it is right? Now, we might well ask if the modern age even permits a true concept of conscience. And we may ask if modern society and the modern state cannot be so powerful that it can grind away and destroy any concept of conscience. That was the experience of Alexander Isaevich Solzhenitsyn, an experience he catalogued in a testament to the attempt of the state to destroy the idea of conscience in his magnificent work, The Gulag Archipelago. It's easy for us to debate academically in a nice, quiet setting in a free society, the idea of conscience. But I ask you to put yourself back to a pallid February afternoon in 1945 on the Eastern Front as the Soviet armies are marching relentlessly towards Berlin. And you are, not you, but a captain in the Red Army, Alexander Solzhenitsyn. You have risen up and only recently become a captain because of extraordinary bravery, leading your artillery company out of a fire pocket. And you wear upon your chest the Order of the Red Star and the Order of the Patriotic War. And you have the proud shoulder boards of an officer in the heroic Red Army. You receive a routine request, as it seems to you, from your colonel, your commander, to report to his headquarters. You walk in, and he is seated behind his desk, and there is, you notice just vaguely, a crowd of officers standing in the corner. And he says, Solzhenitsyn, give me your pistol. Give him. Well, yes, here you are, sir. And out of that crowd of officers burst two men in civilian clothes. You are under arrest. We are agents of SMERSH. SMERSH. Why, the very acronym is enough to cause you terror. Death to spies, that is what it means. What am I under arrest for? Shut up! And then, with a brutal hand, they rip away your shoulder boards and rip off the medals from your chest, humiliating you in public. And they start to pull you out the door again, simply saying, what am I under arrest for? Shut up again! But that colonel, your commander, stands up in a very dangerous gesture for himself and extends his hand across the table and says, I wish you happiness. Captain, you have a friend, I believe, on the Ukrainian front. Ah, there it is. Shut up! The space agents say to him, or we'll come for you next. But that tiny act of conscience is one of the random attempts by individuals to stand up to an all-destroying machinery of state that is the government of Joseph Stalin in the Soviet Union. A friend on the Ukrainian front, why, all we've done is write a few letters back and forth to each other, and we did refer to the Prince of Thieves, and that was our way of talking about Stalin, but surely that couldn't be enough to get me in all this trouble. But you are. And Alexander Solzhenitsyn will be led first to jail and interrogation. Oh, that interrogation. That interrogation that millions and millions and millions in the course of communism, the Soviet Union, would go through. For you see, the agents who interrogate you, the members of the KGB are their earlier acronyms. None of them wants the truth. In fact, they will say in an honest moment, the case is already decided against you. All we have to have is some evidence. If you don't give us the evidence, we'll make it up. And the pain, the physical pain to go with the mental pain, not allowing you to sleep, a light constantly burning. But in fact, there is nothing like just the pure physical pain, the beatings over and over and over again, your hand, your genitals, your head crushed beneath their boots over and over again, until you will sign a document. And that is all they want. Put your name down on that document. That makes it legal. In a society in which there is no real justice, legality is everything. Sign it. Solzhenitsyn himself would be sentenced in while he was still absent, in absentia. Not an unusual matter. Sentenced by what was then the former KGB, sentenced to 8 years in a labor camp. Ah, those labor camps, where perhaps some 20 million individuals died. Not just statistics, but people like you right there, torn like Solzhenitsyn away from their homes, not in fact for anything they had done, but as part of a systematic policy of terror, of rule by terror. And Solzhenitsyn would document in his magnificent The Gulag Archipelago that this was not some random aberration of one man, Joseph Stalin. It went to the very beginning of communism, to the very beginning of the Bolshevik Revolution, to Comrade Lenin himself, who spoke of the need to rule by terror. To eliminate anyone that was a possible danger, yes indeed, but go far beyond that. To arrest you for having done nothing so that four other people will be terrified and in fact do nothing. And that was why Solzhenitsyn was arrested. All over the Western Front, as the Soviet armies moved closer to Berlin, soldiers and officers came in contact with Germans. They came in contact with the West. They came in contact with ideas that were different from communism. And they could bring them back, these ideas, like an infectious plague in the mind of Stalin. And so arrest and terrorize and terrorize. And as victory became ever closer, then ever greater was the danger that the Soviet citizenry would want a relaxation of the terror. So terrorize them all the more. That is why Solzhenitsyn and millions of others would be arrested. The arrest should come about in as a public a fashion as possible. Perhaps tear you away from your family in the night, but all the neighbors saw it. There you are, sleeping peaceably. There's a rap upon the door, and your first thought is, my heavens, is that the office manager coming up for our apartment? Oh, no. There they are, Smershaw, the KGB. Pulling you out the door, ransacking your house, and telling your wife if she makes an outcry, they'll arrest her too, and then dragging you off. And of course, the terror lies in knowing you have done nothing, and yet you are arrested. Or perhaps they come to your office, and they are in front of everyone, arrest you as a spy for the German government. How can you be a spy for the German government? You, in fact, have never met a German in your life. but they will prove that you have. And in the course of the interrogation, you will be faced with documents that have your signature upon it, that you know you never signed. But there's your signature. You can't deny it. For the KGB has an apparatus elaborately designed so that any person's signature can be forged. Any document can be forged. A case can be made against any person. It does not matter that you are innocent. In fact, innocence simply becomes a relative matter. There is no absolute innocence. It is simply what the state wants to believe about you. And the whole system is rigged, from the interrogators right on up to the judge, to sentence you to a labor camp. And there, in a frozen part of Siberia, you will work and work and work. You might be digging some meaningless canal. You might be cutting lumber. And every morning during the bitter winter, you look out the door and out the window, and you watch this tiny little thermometer that is out there. 49 degrees below zero. Just let it drop one more degree. If it's 50 below, you don't have to work. But it hovers at 49, and the guards, well-dressed, padded in their overcoats, they come in and say, "Let's go." And don't you dare say yes, but with a windshield, it's well below 50. Oh, no. Out you go to work. And the order has come through. Use up prisoners. That is to say, work them until they die. So you will work all through the bitter night, the digging lit by lanterns. And you will die, and you will die, and you will die. And do you know what? The guards who are doing this, the judges who are sentencing you, the agents who have arrested you, they are doing their duty. They are responsible. They are doing what is required of them patriotically. Don't tell them they're committing wrong acts. How would our state, our beloved Communist Party, our beloved Stalin, how would they order us to do anything that was wrong? If you are arrested, it must be because you deserve to be arrested. And you know, even your wife will begin to have those doubts about you during the long years of separation. And your children, they will prove themselves to be good red pioneers. They might even rat upon your wife if she seems too sympathetic towards you. Well, why not? That's how to get your next merit badge. So to your family, you are a traitor. To your neighbors, you're a traitor. To those you worked with, you're a traitor. And is there anything more despicable and disgusting than a traitor? A traitor. That's what Solzhenitsyn was. He had carried out anti-Soviet propaganda. Solzhenitsyn would wonder, was it fate or was it God that saved him from death in a labor camp? He had wanted to study classics, philology, and fortunately, because those were the first sort of people who were sent off to die, if they really believed in what they learned in the great books, he had not been able to study philology. He had had to study mathematics. And he had a mathematical training. Because he had a mathematical training, after 6 months of hard labor, he was shifted to a labor camp that focused upon scientific research to do mathematical calculations. And that saved him. That saved his life. When his 8 years were up, he was then sentenced, once again in absentia, to internal exile, far off in Central Asia, in Kazakhstan, there to live out his life, removed from European Russia, unable to travel, his passport stamped, former prisoner, former traitor. Once again, fate intervened. Solzhenitsyn could have been, like millions of others, and absolutely crushed by this terrifying experience. So broken that, having gotten out of it alive, even if they were in internal exile in the middle of nowhere, just to stay quiet, don't you see? Don't make any more trouble. Don't do anything that will destroy you. Be like the artist, for example, that had once been a prominent member of the artist union under Stalin, painting and doing exactly what he was told, and then one day he was just arrested. And he never knew what for, but just arrested. Suffered in the labor camp, finally let go, sentenced to internal exile, and there he sat. just fishing, and grateful they got enough of a little bit of pension from the artist union to buy some black bread and some vodka. Catching fish, salting them, and living off of those salted fish and his little bit of black bread and vodka, and bothering nobody and saying nothing to anyone. But not Solzhenitsyn. He was not going to remain silent. And it was his duty. It was his duty that all those who suffered not be forgotten. How could one man do that? Well, he set about to write. Writing in secret while he taught mathematics and chemistry in a local high school. Writing in secret one day in the life of Ivan Denisovich. A poignant, penetrating, powerful portrayal of just what it was like to be in the labor camp. Well, that was a work that you would keep forever hidden. But Solzhenitsyn decided to try to make it public, to go out with it, and to take the tremendous risk, because he believed it was his duty, to send it to a possible publisher. You can call it random chance, you can call it fate, but at that very moment, in 1962, it became useful to the Soviet government and the Communist Party to attack Stalin, to portray Soviet society as having moved away from all the evils of Joseph Stalin. That was useful to the now dictator, Nikita Khrushchev. He had already several years before, in 1956, made a secret speech to the Communist Assembly, savagely attacking all of the abuse of power by Stalin. Now that speech was made public. And it was useful to have a literary work that documented this terror. Thus came out one day in the life of Ivan Denisovich, with the full approval of the party, with the full approval of the writers' union. And suddenly there was Solzhenitsyn celebrated. Ah, but what the state says today can change tomorrow, and it never said it yesterday, don't you see? For all is controlled by the state, and it controls the past. Well, we never really wanted that. Suddenly, Solzhenitsyn is given the choice. Become a loyal member of the party, write exactly what we tell you, and you can stay in the writers' union. And without being in the writers' union, you can get nothing published. He refuses. What he has written since then is confiscated. He is publicly expelled, publicly humiliated by being thrown out of the writers' union. Well, you say, well, so what? Well, be publicly expelled from the American Medical Association. That's serious. Be publicly expelled from the American Bar Association. Wouldn't you take that seriously? Yes, you would. He's thrown out of the writers' union. But he keeps writing. He keeps documenting this terror. And finally, he has completed, based on 227 testimonies, his magisterial work, the Gulag Archipelago, portraying the history of our sewage system, as he calls it. That vile, disgusting underground current that has swept away millions and millions and millions. The interrogation. The brutality of the guards who interrogate you, who, like a modern journalist, like a journalist in America, don't want the truth and can't deal with a logical argument. What they want are a series of buzzwords, and anything you say, they turn to their own advantage. They just want that confession, and they believe they're doing their duty. Why overhear the wife of a prison guard in a brutal labor camp? Why, you know, Ivan Pavlovich is the finest man in the world. Do you know they will call him up in the middle of the night and they will say, Ivan Pavlovich, you get down here. We've got somebody we can't crack. And that poor man will come back home in the morning, his fist so swollen he can't hold a spoon in his hand, and I have to feed him like a baby his porridge. Now, isn't that a good man who will work so hard for his family? Of course, his knuckles are swollen because he's been beating you all night. But they're doing their duty. They're doing their duty. The history of our sewage system, how it began under Comrade Lenin, that it is not an aberration, but fundamental to the very character of socialism, which must rule by terror. because it rests upon the denial of a most basic human right, the right to property. And all those who perished, all those who died, are documented. Well, you better not publish something like that, Solzhenitsyn is told, but he manages to smuggle it out of the country. Now he's really in big trouble. And he gives a secret interview, but what will remain secret, to the New York Times about the persecution he is going under. You know, we'll keep it off the record. Well, they don't. Now he really is guilty of anti-Soviet propaganda. You must say that. Going and telling publicly what is being done in the Soviet Union, how thought is conquered. And, of course, he cannot accept the Nobel Prize that he's received in 1970. And he cannot go to Sweden. Why would you want to accept a Nobel Prize for a work like the Gulag Archipelago that is nothing but anti-Soviet propaganda? But he has become too celebrated to crush again. The politics of the world have changed enough that what would have been done under Stalin, simply eliminate him, isn't possible. So as a traitor, he is expelled from his country, publicly thrown out, stripped of his Soviet citizenship, and sent out. First to Switzerland, and finally to Vermont, Cavendish, Vermont, where he lives on a farm and continues to write. A traitor, publicly humiliated, but accepted into the West, where the West, of course, wants him to embrace our lifestyle. If he's an anti-Soviet, surely he is going to be a complete believer in our modern concept of democracy and capitalism. And thus, it is the hope that he will become an oracle of showing how bad the Soviet Union is by showing how good we are. But Solzhenitsyn was and stayed a man of absolute conscience. And as he got away from the impressive, soul-destroying education that he had received as a boy in the Soviet Union, he began to get a new sense of what he really was. He began to understand that Russia was, in his words, an autonomous culture, a culture 1,000 years old, a culture that had been all but destroyed by communism because it represented eternal values. Communism rests upon a belief that there are no absolutes, as there is no God. Communism is officially atheistic. And strip away God, then there were no absolute right and wrong. That is why the state can tell you today it is right to be allied with the Germans, let's say in 1939, and suddenly in 1942 you are opposed to them. That's why it can tell you that today it is right to own a little farm, and then 1 year later you are a kulak, a peasant, owning a farm who must be sent to a labor camp, and everybody will agree with it. So no right and no wrong, no truth. Truth is what the party says truth is. As Stalin once hissed, the party can do anything it wants. And that is why the old Russian culture was so opposed and had to be eradicated. Because it was a deeply spiritual culture, one that rested upon a belief in God, in a spiritual God, the God of the icons, the God who was utterly involved in the state. We like to call it Caesaropapism, the ancient Russian relationship between the state and the czar and the church. But this meant simply that the God was the ruler of Russia. And the Tsar was accountable to him and only to God. But he would be judged, and he would be judged on the basis of absolute right and absolute wrong. And Solzhenitsyn became more and more convinced that in this old Russian, deeply spiritual culture of God lay his own salvation and redemption. Why had he gone through this terrible suffering? He'd gone through it to testify to right and to wrong and to redeem himself. To redeem himself. Thus, he was brought to Harvard University in 1978 to receive an honorary degree and to give the commencement address. How many commencement addresses have we sat through, filled with their platitudes, given perhaps by movie stars or someone you want to receive give a donation to the university? And Solzhenitsyn was expected to give a few platitudes, maybe talk a little bit about literature and what it was like to write in a free society. Instead, he gave the most thoughtful indictment of our own Western democracy. Not, he said, as an enemy, but as someone who is your friend, but looks at it from a different vantage point. Looks at the West and how wrong it is in so many ways. You know, it's not long ago that the West believed that it would have eternal authority over the world through its colonies. Remember those days when the British Empire, the sun never set upon it, or the magnificent French Empire, or even the Empire of the Dutch? Well, how fragile that was, Solzhenitsyn says. How rapidly it evaporated and left behind nothing but problems. The terrible, terrible problems of Africa or of Indochina, those go right back to your imperial ideas, said Solzhenitsyn. But you have not learned. You still think that the West is the model. And that is why you want to turn the whole of the world into a model Western capitalistic liberal democracy in which everyone follows your values. And with the spread of capitalism, you are simply continuing that imperial march. But what are those values, he says? They are, first of all, an utter contempt for justice. Oh, I have lived in a society in which there were no laws. Laws were simply what the party said they were. But you have gone to the other extreme, in which you too have no longer justice, but only legalism. And what is right legally, that is all that matters. And you care nothing for justice. And you have become the most litigious society in the world. Suing and countersuing. All not in a belief of justice, but only in legality. And secondly, your press. Now, I have lived in a society in which there was no openness, in which the press was absolutely controlled by the state, and it is an evil thing. But your press does much evil. Your journalists, your reporters, they will take a person's reputation and utterly destroy it, based not on facts, not on justice, but what might sell newspapers, what might be a little blip in the ratings, and based on scurrilous rumors and unnamed sources. And the person's reputation is destroyed, and the reporter is absolutely held unaccountable in the name of journalistic freedom. That is a form of government by terror. And your capitalism, it can become all-destroying, a soul-gnawing evil in which any kind of spiritual concern is replaced by the desire simply to make more money and to spend it on ever more useless matters. And that is what your society is guided by, money. A man is not regarded because he is just, or a woman regarded because she has a conscience. It is simply how much money they make. And you embrace that as a positive good because of your greatest failing, which is your desire to root out from every crevice of life God and the Spirit. You have become an utterly materialistic society. And you have marginalized God until God is without meaning in the lives of ordinary individuals and the values by which they
live those lives.
With the collapse of communism, Solzhenitsyn went back to the Soviet Union, and he's largely ignored. Ignored here, largely ignored even in the Soviet Union. And they paid him what is perhaps the ultimate irony by establishing a literary prize in his name, thus trying completely to institutionalize this voice of conscience and duty, who, like a Socrates, spoke out from his prison and torment to give us the truth.